Welcome everybody to an extra cool episode of Podcast Them Softly. This is Frank, and of course, I'm joined with Nick. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good, bud. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Today we are joined by filmmaker Benjamin Cox, whose film is opening today, and I saw his film at the Santa Barbara Film Festival last year, which was part of the official selection. I'm old enough to remember when it had a different title, so this is kind of cool.
So old.
So old, I know. And also Ben was a part of our red carpet interview section of our Santa Barbara Film Festival podcast. So listeners will remember Ben from that. The film is called Better Off Single. It stars Aaron Tveit, Cal Penn, Laura Miller, Abby Elliott, Jason Ralph, Chris Elliott, Lewis Black, a whole bunch of people. Ben, thanks for coming on, and why don't you tell us a little bit about your film?
Yeah, thanks for guys. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on the best named podcast there is,
Thank you.
which is tremendous. And look, we shot the movie in 2014, and it's been a little bit of a long road in terms of getting through the post production process and sort of dealing with the festival circuit and all the rest of that kind of stuff. But now we are launching, and it's super thrilling to be able to get it out there today, which is cool. So yeah, we're going to be in theaters in a handful of cities and, nationwide on pretty much every platform there is, which is cool. And so, it's good to get it out in front of folks and see what people think.
So how did this all come about? What's like the gestation of the project?
It's one of those kind of things where when you kick around stories with your friends about what are they doing, Mary, I live in New York City and, going through periods of when you're dating and trying to figure out sort of how that all works and what are people doing and all that sort of stuff, you realize that on some level, like the joke is like there's nothing funny about dating in New York City, right? But it's like serious business. You have to follow certain rules and, the whole thing is kind of an interesting concept, like in and of itself. But it's not too dissimilar from dating a lot of other places. It's just that it becomes slightly hyperbolic on some level because it's New York. And so this was really sort of an amalgamation of thinking about like life in general being funny and particularly the New York City dating scene and trying to think of a way to catalyze all of those experiences that people have within the context of something that maybe feels a little bit surreal and kind of fun and coming up with a script that could work and that would be fun for really talented actors to play roles in and kind of be creative and kind of participate and do different things and here we are. So that's a pretty broad response, I guess, to that question. But yeah, it's a fun movie. It's kind of hard to describe. Other than you either get into it and you love it or you really don't. But I think for the most part, the response has been extremely positive, and it's been an enjoyable ride for everybody involved.
Now, you wrote, directed, produced, and edited this film. What is
Did,
that?
yeah.
What is that like to be in that much control?
Yeah, well, control is sort of one way to put it. It's funny because, like, a filmmaker friend of mine, when he was like, I'm kind of like a feedback whore. Like, I really like to get feedback, especially in the edit process. And so I invited a whole bunch of people over to my apartment and solicited response. Like, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And he was like, oh, man. And I saw that you, like, wrote and directed and edited. And I was like, geez, this is going to be a bear. What am I going to do? And so, I think what's interesting about that conceptually is on some level, yeah, it's like you do in theory have control over sort of what the ultimate outcome of it is. But on the other hand, you're a little bit stranded on an island unless you're out there like actively soliciting feedback in a meaningful way. And what I mean by that is like there's so many people who, nobody likes to hurt anybody's feelings, so they're like, it's great. But that isn't particularly useful while you're trying to, like, get to the ultimate locked cut that is going to be the thing that lives on in perpetuity. And so, you know, the process is a little isolating on one level. It's empowering on another. It's exhilarating and terrifying. But I think what it really came down to is, as a first-time feature filmmaker, you know, trying to think of a script that I could do that would enable me to demonstrate that, hey, I know what I'm doing as a director. You know, I wouldn't be able to afford to get one that I didn't write, and so I wrote it. And then getting a producer behind me who could go out and basically beg people for money and, like, figure out how to get this thing done. I couldn't really afford to do that unless I, like, found people to come on and do me solid favors, which Tracy Becker did do. But in addition, also kind of, like, had to take on a lot of that stuff myself. So I had to produce it. And the same thing with the edit. It's like, you know, there's some brilliant editors out there, but those folks are brilliant and they need to be paid. And so, you know, this is a low budget indie movie. And the only way I knew I was going to make the cut work was by literally enslaving myself for an extended period of time. And I think that's where it's born. It's born out of necessity as opposed to desire. So the control aspect is certainly an upside component of that on some level, but it's really a lot more painful than I think anyone wants to endure. And I don't necessarily recommend it, apart from if you feel like you can really get it done and you're willing to put in the time and the effort, then maybe you'll end up with a product that you're really happy with. And I do think that's where we ended up here, so that's good. But you know, it's a little tricky. And also, you know, it's kind of funny too, because it's like, if people like the movie, cool, but if they don't, you know who to blame, right? So that's all good.
And you made a comment that it's a low budget, you know, indie feature, but you amassed an amazing cast for your film. What was that like, putting together this cast, and did you have people in mind when you were writing, and how did that come about?
Yeah, casting, I mean, you know, certainly it's you know, critically imperative that you get the right people to play the right roles. And you know, we had a handful of folks who were helping us out with the casting process early on, and it took me a little while, a couple of years actually, to sort of beg Patricia Deserto to be our casting director on this movie. And Patricia's significant for a lot of reasons. You know, number one, she's like the loveliest human being ever, but also because she cast, you know, Woody Allen's movies. And so she's done his last, like, I don't know, 25 plus movies. And so when she finally agreed to come on board and help us out, it really was, I think, a pretty transformational process, because, you know, if she calls someone at an agency, they're going to take her call. Like, they don't know who I am. They don't care who I am. They're not going to talk to me, but they'll talk to her. And having her involved and having her take a look at the script and say, like, hey, you know, I'm kind of into this. I think this could be really good. And take that chance, if you will, in terms of who I am as a filmmaker, was a pretty important step in the process. Another person that was really helpful was Russell Carpenter, because Russell, for folks who don't know him, he's a cinematographer who won the Oscar for shooting Titanic, among other things. And so he's kind of amazing, and he came on board the project early on as well. He was going to potentially even shoot it, but when we realized we couldn't do this as a union movie, that sort of took him off the table there. He's an executive producer on the project, but he was instrumental in helping us get deals with, like, Panavision, and helping us think about things creatively and other things. And so, you know, my theory is always, like, try to be the slowest, dumbest, least attractive person involved in the movie. And, you know, it's like, you're the worst one, then you're going to be good, right? And so getting folks like Patricia and Russell and Tracy Becker and Chris Tarides to come on board to help us with music, and Chris Muckley, and, you know, like, a whole host of folks who are exceptional at what they do, to sort of believe in the project and really try to get it to where we ideally want it to be, which is, you know, fucking great. then I think we can really make something happen. And it's been lovely. And I think that really helped with the casting, because they could see that, like, hey, you know, this might be your first feature. I mean, whatever, directed commercials and other things, but, like, you know, but you have sort of the people in place that are going to help, like, really bring this thing to life. And so it's a little bit less of a risk on some level to join the team, as opposed to just, like, this one random dude, you know, with his camera, to kind of make it happen that way.
Yeah, yeah, you,
Sorry, ahead. Frank. I think we're both going to ask about Russell Carpenter.
Because I noticed his name in the credits, and I just thought it was so. I just thought it was so interesting, because I'm a big fan of his work and everything else, and I wondered how he became involved as a producer. So that's pretty cool that you know, he did all that for you guys.
Yeah, well, so I produced a short film. I don't know how many years ago now, a while. That the DP on it was a guy named Vincent LaFerre, who. You know, is one of the folks who's kind of like at the forefront of technological change, certainly digital filmmaking, and does a lot of stuff with Canon and a bunch of other places. And so he shot one of the first, actually I think he shot the first digital short film with the Canon 5D Mark II. And that thing, you know, he put it out there, and within like 24 hours had like 1 million views on YouTube. And, you know, like, he's pretty prolific. He does a lot of stuff. He has a blog that, and certainly amongst the gearheads, like, does some stuff. And so he knew Russell. And so when I talked to Vincent about, like, hey, man, would you be interested in looking at this potentially to be the DP? He said, you know, I'm interested. I think it'd be cool. He goes, but you know who would really like this, I think, is Russell Carpenter. And at the time, I was like, well, who's that? And then, you know, which is kind of how silly I was at that moment. And then I looked him up and I was like, oh, wow, holy cow. And so Vincent passed along the script to Russell, and I think it took about 6 months to get him to read it. And then he finally read it, and he said, yeah, man, I'm into this. I think this is really cool. And so we got together for coffee in LA, and, you know, in about 3 hours of time, I, like, had a latte sitting in front of me that I didn't even touch. And, like, we just, like, went back and forth for that entire period, like, having, like, a really interesting, compelling, creative conversation about all kinds of stuff. And he's just, like, a really fascinating guy, obviously very smart, knows exactly what he's doing, and just, like, the kind of soul there is. And, you know, his thing, certainly at the time, was like, look, I could do big explosion movies as sort of like my whole thing that I do, but you could spend 3 days setting up a shot that, like, exists in the movie for 10 seconds, or you could spend 3 days and shoot, you know, 10 minutes of your movie. So, so it just sort of depends. And, you know, and he likes comedy and likes to do different things, and the script resonated with him. And so he was like, yeah, man, I'm into it. Let's talk about it. And if we can make it happen, let's do it. And if we can't make it happen where I can shoot it, then I want to just help you. And so that was tremendous. It was a really, really lovely, lovely thing. He's great. I mean, he's, like, just the nicest human being, and so, so smart, really smart. So that's tremendous.
Now, while watching the film, I noticed a couple of homage shots, which I called you out on when I was in Santa Barbara and we were hanging out. now I'm just curious now, what, I don't want to, I guess it's a poor way of putting it, but I was going to ask you, like, what films, I know filmmakers don't like this question, but I'm always so curious about it. Like, what films do you draw upon to, you know, thematically and or aesthetically construct your project?
Well, you know, yeah, I think I guess I understand sort of why filmmakers maybe don't like that question. Because it's so hard to answer, but by the same token, you know, in this particular instance, there were a number of things that I really thought about. I'm a big believer of breaking down other films onto note cards and then putting them on my wall. So, you know, my apartment turns into, like, it's like a serial killer lives there or something, you know. There's just there's just like note cards everywhere, and I color code them, and there's a specific way for why something's on the wall, and if my wife is trying to move something to get into a cabinet, I'm like, and she's like, you're insane. But like, it's one of those things where like, I kind of get turned on that particular thing, and then I go, okay, well, yeah, why isn't this working? And I don't understand why I can't get the scene to gel with what I've got in mind for the character, or why I can't get the transition to work, or whatever. And I'm like, oh, you know, like in The Princess Bride, they do this one thing, and so then I'll like break down The Princess Bride and I'll throw it on the wall. And then I'll be like, ah, oh, you know, I don't understand. So, but in Annie Hall, they did this thing, so I'll break down Annie Hall and I'll throw it on the wall, or Pulp Fiction or whatever. So there's, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that I actually took the time to break down into the minutiae, if you will, and try to figure out, like, deconstruct sort of what was working. And if you look at a lot of the characters in these films, I also color code my note cards. So if like the male protagonist is in the scene, I'll put a little blue mark on the note card, and if the female is there, I'll put a pink mark just to be like generic about it. And then the best friend is always usually green, and then the best friend of the lady is like yellow, and then just silliness. But basically, to get a sense visually in terms of like when you're actually seeing people in the film, and what, you know, how often do you feel like you need the certain characters to be there so it's going to feel the way it should and resonate in the way that some films that have worked really well for me have done. All the way down to like, well, you know, how many montages are there in When Harry Met Sally, you know, and like, why does that work that there's like four of them? Because you wouldn't think there are, like, if you kind of go back, but then you look at it later and you're like, oh yeah, well, if you break it down, there are. And the way that they're constructed and how does that work, and sort of try to figure out how to get it from this thing that is an idea to something that on a practical level you like know where you want to put your actor and where the camera should go. So yeah, I don't know, like a whole bunch of things. All the films that I mentioned, I did spend a lot of time digging into those, and a whole bunch of other ones. I mean, Casablanca is one of my favorite movies. And I think there's elements in terms of like how Curtiz set up certain shots and what he put in the foreground, and versus, you know, when did the camera move or not move, and, you know, setting things up in the dialogue and the way the characters kind of interact, that I try to apply to different things. You know, whether or not they always work is unclear. but you know, I feel like there's got to be intentionality behind everything that you're doing. And so if you have that, then there's at least a chance that you're going to get it somewhere good.
I wanted to maybe just circle back real quick to just part of the casting, because when I was watching the film, obviously, I'm a big fan of Annalee Ashford, because I love the show Masters of Sex. And I was curious to know how you came about casting her for her small but very funny role.
Yeah, she was a suggestion from Patricia DeSerto in the casting process. And, you know, Annalee at the time was doing mostly Broadway stuff. And obviously, you know, obviously she's been nominated for a couple of Tonys. She's won a Tony. And people didn't really know who she was sort of outside the Broadway circles as much. And, you know, Masters of Sex obviously has really taken off, and she's amazing on that show. But she was looking to find instances where, as someone living in New York, she could sink her teeth into roles that would give her some interesting things to do and not take up too much time, because she could legitimately only shoot on weekends, either because she was in New York doing a play, or because she was doing Masters of Sex in LA, and like Monday through Friday was completely consumed. And so we had this role where we could knock it out in a couple of days. And so she agreed to come in from LA in between Masters of Sex shoot schedule, and took a red eye, and, you know, slept under a desk like the first day she got there, because she was literally so exhausted. And then we shot her for 2 days, and then she, you know, we did her coverage early on sort of like the Sunday, the second day. so that we could wrap her and then she could fly back to LA and do her other stuff. And so, you know, she was an instance where, like, I think for her, it was like probably most important to, make sure that Patricia probably knew who she was, because maybe there's an off chance that she gets cast in a Woody Allen movie, which is like something that we're like super excited about the notion of. And then, but then I think after reading the script, she was just like, when we met, she said, look, I'm really excited that a movie like this is being made at all. Like, I'm really into it, and it's different. And it's not boilerplate in any way, shape, or form. And so it's a question of, like, it's, you know, is there a way to take something that on some level feels like it's a commercial movie, and in fact is one, but also has a bit of the art element going on with it. And I think that was really compelling for her, which is why she agreed to come on board and do it. And I think she really brought the character of Anne to life, and I think she's tremendous in the movie.
Yeah, you put together a pretty remarkable cast. I remember seeing the screening, and the audience was very much engaged throughout the whole thing, and Lewis Black, and in particular Chris Elliott's so great in this film.
Yeah, and
I remember asking you how you cast him, and I didn't realize that the lead was his daughter, so shame on me. Fun fact, everybody.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's funny because, like, Abby Elliott kind of cast him because she was attached to the project, and while we were trying to cobble together the rest of the fund to get the script, like, fully buttoned up and all the rest of that kind of stuff and continuing to build the team and getting closer to shooting, she and I would get together periodically. And so we were out at some lunch one day, and we were kicking around ideas around, and just who do we want to cast for her character's mom in the movie and her character's dad and, like, all that sort of stuff. And she literally said, well, how would you feel about my dad playing my dad in the movie? And I was like, well, let me think about that. I think that's great. and so she said, awesome, that'd be amazing. And so casting him was not really a question of anything other than, like, she just said, okay, I'll ask him if he wants to do it. I'll give him the script. And she gave him the script, and he liked it and said, yeah, okay, I'm in. And so we never actually went through, like, an official thing to cast him in the movie, because it was just like Abby just kind of did it. So we're like cool, you know. And she's she's amazing to work with, and her dad is amazing to work with. I mean, I learned a lot from him in the filmmaking process. Just, you know, you wrap up a scene and you're like, okay, like, you know, can you give me like a couple looks to your left and like a little laugh and a little kind of scowl and like whatever and a little bit to your right. I mean, this is sort of where like the editing stuff kind of comes in, because you know when you get into the cut, you're going to need the ability to kind of move around a little bit. And he's like, yeah, okay, cool, I'll give you that stuff, because you want me to give you some lines. And I'm like, sure, yeah. I mean, I didn't really actually know where he was going with it. And I said, yeah, okay, yeah, whatever you want to do, go for it. And he would just throw in these, like, okay, Charlie. And he was like, this guy, you know, and he'd throw in these little connectors, if you will. And, I mean, I think he looked up like a dozen of them. And I think we used, I don't know, 8 or 9 of them. Like, because they're just so good. And you could throw them in there, and it just sort of helps you get to the exact best line delivery from everyone else at the table as a dinner scene, in order to do it in an organic way. It's not always easy, right? So having like this connective tissue, which is the form of Chris Elliott doing a little line here, a little line there, things that felt like organic to the scene, was great. And it had never occurred to me to ask for that kind of thing, which, you know, maybe on some levels like me being slightly amateurish, but on another level, I think it's kind of like what's fascinating to me about the filmmaking process is how it's ever evolving. And in theory, you should be learning 100% of the time. And so if you get to work with someone who's at like a Chris Elliott caliber level, then why not just try to take anything you can as far as like how to do it better? So that was hugely instrumental.
And So when you set out to make this film, knowing what the independent landscape is right now for film, like how hard was it to sort of put it together, like from a producing standpoint? I just kind of want to get an idea because, you know, there's so many movies out there. There's so many options and, you know, so many different movies in this, you know, genre, this space. What was it like putting the funding together for a film like this?
Well, I mean, I think for this kind of a movie, particularly when you're dealing with like the first time filmmaker thing, because it's like, you know, like who am I, right? I mean, you know, nobody knows who I am. I don't have any street cred. It's like if you haven't shot a feature, then, you know, people don't necessarily believe that you can do it. And I think with good reason, right? It's not an easy thing to do. So really, I think what it came down to was selling people on the notion of the Ben Cox brand for whatever that means, right? Like, i.e., you know, either you're going to believe that I'm going to figure out a way to make this be amazing, or you're not. And so maybe you like the script, or maybe you like certain actors that are attached. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, if the director totally shits the bed, the movie will suck. That's just what's going to happen. And so, and vice versa, like even if you have mediocre material, an amazing director can do stuff. And so for me, this was just a question of making people feel that, with the team that we were assembling, that there would be a support infrastructure in place to ensure that whatever growing pains I'd have to go through as a first-time feature director, we'd be able to get over that, and then just having a million conversations and then another million conversations with people in order to finally find the people who are like, okay, yeah, I'm on board, and, you know, here's a check, and then here's another check, and so on and so forth. I mean, it definitely took years to cobble it all together and really figure out the best way to get it going. I mean, I found that subsequent to kind of getting this one off the ground and, you know, having folks have a positive experience and then being able to see the movie and be pleased with the, you know, the creative outcome, like what the thing looks like, what their performances look like, all that kind of stuff. It's certainly helped with additional projects, but by the same token, it's not going to do you any favors at the first one until they see something. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like it's particularly dissimilar from what I would imagine most first-time filmmakers go through. I just think you got to really want it and just keep having those conversations and, you know, put your money where your mouth is. Like, if you can work for free, do it. If you can work for crazy cheap, do it. Because getting the first one done is pretty pivotal.
Yeah, you know what? It's a great film. It's super funny. It's super sweet. It's got so much heart. I mean, I'm not typically one to LOL at quote unquote, don't cringe when I say this, romantic comedies, but I mean, I very much enjoyed this film, and I mean, I know Nick did as well. And
yeah, it's definitely a lot of fun. People are going to really like it.
And I hope everybody sees it, rent it on VOD, or better yet, actually go to the theater and watch the movie, because, you know, there's nothing better than watching a film on the big screen. Especially when you're sitting next to Leonard Maltin. I forgot to bring that up in my intro. I somehow corralled Leonard Maltin into seeing this movie, and that was just a trip that I got to sit next to him. So,
yeah, he's great.
That was really cool. So your movie's coming out today. What do you have planned next?
Well, I mean, I have a handful of things. I produced a movie called Change in the Air, which stars, among other folks, Mary Beth Hurt, Aidan Quinn, Olympia Dukakis, Macy Gray, Rachel Brosnahan. It's directed by Diane Dreyer, and kind of interesting, like I would describe it as like an ethereal dramedy, a little bit different genre from Better Off Single, but that's when we're just locked picture, and so we're doing the online work for that, and we'll have that ready to go and out at festivals in 2017, which is exciting and kind of fun. I'm working on another thing with the Patton family, so like General Patton, like World War II. We are doing a show. We're in developing that, which is called Generations, and the first sort of, I guess, season, if you will, is going to be about the Pattons, and it's about, like, sort of the family lineage there and sort of the whole notion of, like, you know, General Patton of World War II fame. People kind of know about that, but they don't also realize that he fought in World War One and chased around Pancho Villa in Mexico, and he was in the Olympics, and as you do, and his son was a general during the Vietnam War, and his grandfather was a colonel in the Civil War, and that guy's grandfather was a general directly under George Washington during the American Revolution. And so there's like a pretty long relationship with sort of every significant American war and the Patton family. And so that's one thing we're kind of spending some time on. And you know, I know there's a handful of other projects. I've always believed in the concept of like the material and making sure that whatever it is that I work on, you know, if we can't make it that's amazing, then there's sort of no point. So I'm kind of careful about the kinds of things that I like will think about or explore or try to write or whatever. Like, you know, if it's not ambitious like that, then I don't really aspire to do it. But I don't know, there's a lot of like really interesting ideas out there, and people doing some fun things, and you know, and also I do like commercial work and other stuff sort of in between sort of the bigger projects, so you know, a lot keeping me busy, but I'm pretty excited about Better Off Single hitting theaters and on demand today, because I just think the response we've gotten from it across the board has been so strong and so positive. It's just kind of exciting to see, you know, the hard work that a lot of folks have put into this really come out and be something that we can all be proud of, which is cool. I mean, I think with indie filmmaking in particular, right, like you've got a lot of favors that you're calling in, like people working for cheap or for free or, you know, hoping to get paid on a deferral or whatever it happens to be. And I feel like you kind of owe those people in that process to the point where if you don't put everything you've got into it to make it be like the best it can possibly be, then you're kind of letting down those folks. And so being able to put something out there that is getting the positive response that that really does feel like it's like literally the best movie that I could possibly have made is really gratifying and nice to see. We did some screenings at like all the Soho House locations nationwide. I did a screening on Monday of this week, and they all sold out, which is like great. And I actually got to go to the one in New York, one of the two Soho House locations, and they played it. And it's just nice seeing a bunch of strangers in a room who don't even really know anything about the movie or you or anything like that, and
doing the
LOLs that you're talking about, you know, it's kind of nice, you know, and so it feels good. Occasionally you'll work on something where you go in for the screening or it's a test screening or whatever, and you're not like really sure how you're going to feel. This one feels a little different because it has been getting the positive reception, and again, I'm you know, very proud of it, and I do think it will challenge people sort of beyond the concept of like, you know, what people think of from like a romantic comedy. I mean, I kind of even think about it like that. I think of it, it's like kind of like a straight comedy. It just has to do with dating. And so it's like, if you find anything compelling or interesting about dating in New York City, then it might be worth giving it a watch. But even if you don't, it's like, I believe in the concept of the more specific you can get about certain things, the more it will apply broadly. So even like, you know, by taking it to a really personal level for each one of the characters in the film, the more personal you get with it, the more people it will reach in sort of like an ironic way. And it sort of works out that way. So, you know, that's cool. Try to be truthful and And then I think that's the kind of thing that can resonate. And also, like, I think comedy, if you can do it in a smart way, you know, that's good. You know, my wife and I watch movies a lot, as you might imagine, and, you know, we call them, like, popcorn movies or broccoli movies. Like, popcorn movies are, like, sheer fun, and broccoli movies you watch because you know they're good for you kind of thing. And I like the notion of Better Off Single being, like, on the surface a popcorn movie. You know, it's like, hey, that's going to be fun. I want to see that. I want to watch this fun movie. But, like, secretly, there's, like, broccoli in there. You know, it's like,
right.
Maybe there's a little bit of depth. Maybe there's a little bit of, like, intelligence behind some of the things that are going on. And so it can appeal to a number of folks. And, yeah, I mean, look, like I said, at this point, I couldn't be more pleased with sort of where it's headed and the response it's been getting. So, you know, that's great. And that's due to the contributions from a whole host of folks who really took a chance with getting it out there. And so, you know, I'm pleased that they're pleased, and we'll just see what happens. But, you know, it's headed in the right direction, and, you know, I hope people will check it out and enjoy the experience of it as much as we enjoyed, you know, making it.
Well, awesome, man. Yeah. Best of luck. I'm very excited for, to hear the reception from you, and I'm sure there's going to be a handful of our listeners that are going to check it out, so it'll be cool to hear back from them, and really appreciate you taking the time talking about this. Very exciting. Hopefully I'll run into you again at a film festival sometime soon. And anytime
yeah,
you
thank
got
you
another project.
Much. Yeah, and good luck with all your projects.
Yeah, let me know. Keep in touch.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, very cool. Well, listen, guys, thanks so much for having me on, and you know, podcasting and softly, like, honestly, best name podcast there is.
Well,
awesome.
I appreciate that, man.
Absolutely.
I love it. All right. Well, thanks again, guys. Really appreciate it. And thanks for everyone who may still be listening. If you made it this far, awesome. Thanks.
All right.
Very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot.